WZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Richard Cantu. The Thanksgiving holiday weekend will close with some decidedly winter-like weather. Highs in the teens and 20s in the upper Midwest, 30s and 40s from Philadelphia up through Boston.
From upper Michigan all the way to western New York, we have lake effect snow warnings, winter storm warnings. Parts of western New York from just south of Buffalo up to Watertown could see 2 to 4 feet of snow. That will last right through the weekend, even into early next week, and that could impact post-Thanksgiving travel.
ABC News meteorologist Melissa Griffin. President Biden and the First Lady delivered Thanksgiving Day meals to firefighters on Nantucket Island. President-elect Trump took to his social media to, in his words, wish happy Thanksgiving to all, including to the radical left lunatics who've worked so hard to destroy our country. Several Democratic members of Connecticut's congressional delegation say they were targeted with threats that turned out to be phony. This is ABC News. All right, you've had the turkey and trimmings, maybe watch some football. Now we're about to enter the holiday gift procurement bacchanal.
The average shopper will spend more than $900 on the holidays while becoming more selective, says Catherine Cullen of the National Retail Federation.
We know consumers are maybe pulling back when they look at gifts for coworkers, gifts for some of those non-essential relationships in their lives.
And gift recipients are more pragmatic as well.
We are seeing people saying, I want a gift card, I'd love some clothes or accessories.
Jim Ryan, ABC News.
San Jose State University says it's disappointed Boise State forfeited its semifinal match in the Mountain West Conference women's volleyball tournament. The Broncos didn't say specifically why. Recently, a lawsuit was brought by players from various schools calling for a San Jose State player not to be allowed to participate, citing unspecified reports asserting there was a trans player on the squad. Richard Cantu, ABC.
Offer not valid in all states or where prohibited by law. Loans are subject to lender approval. See website for details.
Bills piling up? Rent due? Just need some extra cash to get by? Then you need to go to getcash.com, where you can get approved for a loan of up to $10,000 in minutes. No need to search through endless loan sites. Getcash.com is one of the largest lender networks. They can help anyone get up to $10,000 regardless of their credit score. Best part? The money can be in your bank account as soon as the next day. When you need fast cash help, go to getcash.com. That's getcash.com.
Max Inc. on Civic Media, live in the lair with Kalen Cole.
Have you ever walked away from a karaoke performance thinking, yeah, that was a lot better than the original person?
Oh my gosh, I don't know if I should admit that or not.
I think you should. Because now we know there's a song.
Jimmy's tugging on it now.
I know. Oh, you're going to get me in trouble, Jimmy.
It's live in the lair. Grab the podcast now at maxincradio.com and listen live on Saturday night, 6 to midnight, across the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm James Kelly with WBZH News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WBZH website at buzzofthenorth.com.
Packers football tonight. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Green Bay Packers playing on Thanksgiving, a tradition that dates back to the 1920s. They host the Dolphins, who feature two of the fastest wide receivers, Tariq Hill, Jalen Waddle, led by quarterback Tua Tagovailoa, Packers defensive coordinator Jeff Hafley.
I mean, you'll see him throw the ball down the field and hit some big plays, but then you'll see a lot of catch and run. We're in rhythm. He's throwing the ball. And it's not just the receivers, it's the backs, too. You know, creating some mismatches, getting the ball in space, and letting their guys kind of catch and run. So they do a really good job with that.
College football, the Badgers host the Minnesota Gophers tomorrow at 11 a.m. Luke Fickell says he won't bring in a special speaker to explain the tradition of playing for the Paul Bunyan Axe.
I'm not a guy that brings in people to speak. You know, I mean, we've got guys within this program. We've got guys that it's meant the world to them. They've bled it. There's a lot of guys that you know, are new here that if they don't understand, shame on them, because we talked about it in fall camp. We talked about it in spring football.
That's head coach Luke Fickell. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Well, Glicken Weekend's box office haul turned out to be no match for that of Barbenheimer's, but it was still impressive and helped the holiday box office get off to a great start. As expected, Wicked landed in the top spot with a take of $114 million, more than doubling Gladiator 2's haul of $56 million at the gate. Gladiator 2, directed by Ridley Scott and starring Paul Mescal, Connie Nielsen, Denzel Washington, and Pedro Pascal, was never expected to be the top dog, as it was always Oppenheimer to Wicked's Barbie. Wicked slightly exceeded expectations expectations with its box office haul, whereas Gladiator 2 came in just under its expectations. This is becoming a trend in Hollywood where two films coming out at the same time were not necessarily competing against each other, but help each other create a social media phenomenon. Landing in third place in week two of its release was Red One with $13 million. Rounding out the top five were Bonhoeffer, Pastor Spy Assassin, and the resilient Venom, The Last Dance, which came in fifth place with $4 million. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Cloudy tonight with a few flurries and snow showers. Lows close to 10 with a brisk breeze. And more clouds around for tomorrow. Scattered flurries, maybe a brief snow shower, a touch breezy. Highs nudging to near 20. Low 20s for the rest of the holiday weekend. Currently, it's 19 degrees.
Jane Mattenair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, Matt Rothschild is going to be sitting in the big chair to break down all the news with analysis and humor. Don't miss it.
Mattenair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's
You're
home
listening
for
to
North
pre-recorded
News Radio.
Content produced by Civic Media.
It's a good day to be indigenous. Get up, stand up.
They are going to become more brutal.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. A kadagi to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. Hey, we discuss local, national, Native news and events. And as you know, Chujunk, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Yes, you are right, Dega. This portion of the show is supported by J.S. Bean Factory off Randolph Avenue in St. Paul. Only the good stuff keeps us awake.
Hey, before we get our friend Robert Lilligren on that we haven't talked to, it seems like, in 3 months, but we want to take a quick listen to our friend Governor Evers from the great state of Wisconsin. Why don't we take a listen?
Hey there, Native Roots Radio. Governor Tony Evers here with my weekly update. The best and most important part of my job as governor is meeting with Wisconsinites to hear about the issues that matter most to them and find solutions to the challenges we face. An important part of that work is getting out of the Capitol to meet people where they are, at every corner of our state, at their homes and businesses, schools and campuses, farms, hospitals, community gatherings, and so much more. That's why I made it my goal to visit all 72 counties every year as governor, and I'm proud that this year we have wrapped up my fifth 72-county tour since taking office. I've had the opportunity to see good work happening all across the state, from groundbreaking for new affordable housing in the city of Viroqua to fixing potholes in Green Bay to efforts to close the digital divide and expand access to high-speed internet in River Falls. I met with veterans and veteran service organizations like those in Eau Claire and Nina who are using therapy horses to help veterans heal from PTSD. I talked with employers in Sheboygan, Tomahawk, and Chippewa Falls about our efforts to attract, train, and retain workers in our state and build the workforce needed to support a 21st century economy. I've toured healthcare systems and talked with healthcare providers about how we're going to help ensure folks and families across our state have access to the affordable, high-quality health care they deserve. I visited our schools and classrooms to hear from students and educators about what they're working on and excited about at school. Heck, I even paddled a dugout canoe with Ho-Chunk Nation, made a pizza at a pizza farm in Athens, and visited the world's largest talking cow, Chatty Bell, in Neillsville. And believe me, ate plenty of ice cream cones along the way. Folks, Wisconsin will never cease to amaze me, and it's a privilege to be your governor and to travel the state to hear your stories. So thank you for welcoming me into your homes, businesses, and communities this year, and let's do it again in 2025. Take care, folks. Thanks for listening. Back to you, Robert, and Native Roots Radio.
Hey, wow, big Pinigigi, Governor Evers. That was a fun update. Hey, we have our friend Robert Lilligren on. Robert Lilligren is president and CEO of Native American Community Development Institute here in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis. And Wow, Robert, I haven't seen you in a while. How you been doing?
I'm doing good. Thanks, Robert. Hey, Haley, bonjour. And it hasn't been 3 months, but it's been a couple weeks, yeah, since I've been here. So it's good to be back.
Well, excellent. And it's fun. We talked a lot of political yesterday with Arvina Martin of Madison, Wisconsin, Ho-Chunk. And we were really kind of bummed out about this Matt Gaetz thing. And then all of a sudden, shazam.
Shazam, right? And no big surprise. I have a feeling there'll be quite a few of these Trump nominees that aren't going to make it even up to appointment that are going to be dropping out. That's my feeling. I thought Matt Gaetz would be the first to go, and he was.
Awesome. So I have a question. I don't know if you can answer this or if it has anything to do with the governor down there in Florida, but can he unresign? Do you know?
Or would
the governor put him back in because they have to find
all being sorted out, right? I doubt that he could unresign, and really I doubt that he would want to. I mean, his resignation so far is what's saving his investigation report from being released. I have a hunch that will find its way into the public discourse before too long. So I think it was a smart move for him to resign just to kind of protect himself. I don't think you can really unresign from something like that, but he could be appointed to something if there's a vacancy, or Trump is saying he has a brilliant future, you know, ahead. So, yeah. So I think there's so many moving parts here. It's so sort of unprecedented, right? So we'll have to see how this plays out.
Well, it's interesting too. I mean, not only the big sex scandal that he has going on, but also he never really litigated anything. He just went right from law school to politics, and so
right. So yeah, and you know, he had a political father. You know that, right? He's a nepo baby in politics, so he's kind of riding that. And he just seems like a really despicable person. As more and more facts come out, and they'll keep coming out, his whole investigation, his whole underage sex scandal thing, it just gets worse and worse.
Definitely. Well, Robert, we haven't talked since the election, and I know we were going to get together, and it was interesting that night was, it didn't look good from the get-go. And so we didn't jump online and talk about it. And now we haven't talked since. There's been, we took a week off here from Native Roots Radio because, I don't know, Haley, but I was shell-shocked and had to regroup. But I feel rested and ready to go and back in the groove. And so how do you feel? I know there's a lot of things to be grateful for that we're still doing.
Yeah, right. And, you know, I feel I'm trying to feel as optimistic as I can, and trying to encourage others to feel as optimistic as they can. And, you know we're in for 4 hard years, 4 chaotic, bumpy years. And as I've been telling my staff at Native American Community Development Institute and others, you know, I think a theme of the next 4 years is going to be resist, right? Resistance. Yeah. I've actually been wearing your resist t-shirt quite a bit lately just to reinforce that, that feeling. And, you know, in some ways, lucky for us as Native people, resistance is not an unusual thing, right? Yeah. We're accustomed to that. We've lived in that for decades, centuries. And so I think we'll at least have that advantage over maybe some people who aren't used to having to live in resistance. So there's that, you know, and this harkens back to my time on the Minneapolis City Council, and I represented a beautifully diverse ward that had a lot of lower wealth people, you know, working people and things. And during my 12 years on the city, Minneapolis City Council, we had 2 economic downturns, kind of severe ones. And I would kind of jokingly say, you know, hey, my constituents are used to living, you know, poor. This is going to be easy for us. And the data showed, in a lot of ways, that was actually true. And it wasn't as big of a negative impact on the people I represented it as it was in the higher wealth people. So I feel like, you know, again, as Native people, we have a lot of experience and, you know, our famous resiliency, and I suspect that Native people are going to show a way to hopefully thrive in this. And at Native American Community Development Institute, we made a commitment to laughter in our day-to-day lives, and we'll get through.
Yeah, definitely. I want to talk to you a little bit. We're going to take a quick break, but I'll ask you the question when we get back, because I'm curious about your response, because again, you were in government during this time, and I was going to talk about, well, I'll just say it real quick. We got 30 seconds and then you can respond when we come back, is that 2004, we had Bush 2 and a wipeout there. And then in 2006, we had the blue wave of the House and the Senate. In 2008, we had Obama. So I'm hopeful with the history.
You're here.
We'll be right back. Hey, we're here with Robert Lilligren, our White Earth Ojibwe friend, and we'll be right back.
I heard sex trafficking happens a lot in Indian country. What is that?
Here are some of the real reasons why sex trafficking happens in Indian country. Unequal gender roles that were forced on us by colonization. Communities don't have enough resources. Silence around domestic and sexual violence. Lack of attention and justice for missing and murdered indigenous people. There's a lot of behavior that keeps our communities out of balance. These are just a few true reasons why Native communities are targeted by traffickers. When these acts of violence happen in our communities, it opens us all up for exploitation.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
The city of Minneapolis is now on Native Roots Radio with Minneapolis AIR. AIR stands for American Indian Relations. Guest host Christine McDonald talks to people about important things affecting the city's Native communities. Minneapolis AIR dives into topics like public safety, public health, elections, and so much more. Tune in to Minneapolis AIR on Native Roots Radio from 5 to 6 p.m. on the second Wednesday of every month, right here on AM 950.
Programming on Native Roots Radio is supported in part by MinSure. Looking for health insurance but not sure where to start? MinSure has you covered. You can find discounts, compare private health plans, and see if you qualify for free or low-cost insurance. Plus, get help from an expert so you save on the coverage you need. Enroll online by December 18th for coverage starting January 1st. Get started today at MinSure.org. That's mnsure.org.
Signing up for $1 bus and train rides with the Transit Assistance Program, or TAP, is quick and easy. Do it straight from your computer or phone by uploading one of the pre-approved documents listed at metrotransit.org/TAP, along with a copy of your ID. They'll mail you a go-to card with a full year of discounted rides. For questions or translation help, call 612-373-3333. That's 612-373-3333.
Hi, this is Representative Charisse Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Native American Community Development Institute, or NACD, in Minneapolis.
Hey, we're here with our friend Robert Lilligren, President and CEO of Native American Community Development Institute here in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis. And Robert, I left you with a kind of a cliffhanger statement. Can you help me remember? I think you were still a city council member during that heyday.
So the question was about sort of these political shifts, right?
Yeah. And
so I first got elected in 2001. And we faced a hostile federal administration, a hostile state administration. It was the Pawlenty, Governor Pawlenty years. And these administrations that were hostile to cities, right? They wanted cities to fail. They saw cities as these bastions of Democratic voters. And so they continued to turn off the tap of any kind of state and federal support to cities, and they really broke the covenant of local, state, and federal government support. And it was hard. In all 12 years that I served on the Minneapolis City Council were budget-cutting years. And often that meant multiple cuts throughout the year as waves of funding were cut, and it was harsh. And we had to tighten our belt, and we had to be very serious about what we could and couldn't do. And we had to be really collaborative with our communities and explaining what was going on and seeking their input and guidance. And one of the ironies is, finally, after 12 years of being on the city council, our fiscal responsibility began to pay off. And the very next year would have been a year where we actually had money to spend. And I never got to experience that. But I mean, I feel like government works best when there's an acknowledgement that local government, state government, federal government all have their roles. And if any of them abdicate that, it really creates disruption. And so I think those of us that live in big cities, I live here in Minneapolis, you know, need to be prepared for something like that. How do we, in a collaborative, community-based way, tighten our belts the way we're going to need to?
Wow, excellent point. I remember roughly 2006, when just like when all the property was going crazy. I mean, I'd have to cut my grass and my house was worth $50,000 more. And then we paid for it in 2008.
Right. So I lived in an area of Minneapolis that's called the Phillips area. And it was a blighted area that had rapid redevelopment. And then right around the time you're talking about, Robert, it wasn't uncommon. And I was a little landlord, you know, for properties in our neighborhood to appreciate literally 500%.
Yeah.
Right. And then when we hit the wall, they depreciated really rapidly. And that was painful. On the community. And so, you know, are there ways to smooth that out? Houses went foreclosed like crazy. I'm sure you remember the foreclosure crisis of the mid-2000s. And the impact on lower wealth people, right? Phillips neighborhood, Phillips community is very diverse. There's no majority demographic there. It tends to be lower wealth. And so people were sort of enjoying the increase of their major asset, their homes, and then all of a sudden they had nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing but debt, right? And so it took its toll.
Yeah, it really did. So I guess for me bringing that up, I don't want to be a Debbie Downer, but we made it through, and there's some things that had to change, especially the way people were going after people with these loans. That was terrible, and people losing their houses and being upside down.
Right. There's all this predatory lending, right? And so I represented the big headquarters of Wells Fargo Home Mortgage. And Wells Fargo and several of their subsidiaries were some of the worst actors in predatory lending. And so they had to be held accountable. But they overlent with really toxic lending products and tools to people of color, to lower wealth people. And so it just destroyed families, financial, like families that were trying to build generational wealth. It just sucked all that out.
Yeah, I remember that, but we made it through, but you know, it was very costly because of the predatorial lending that happened to our friends. And like Nina says here, legal loan sharking.
Yeah.
Just like credit cards.
That's what it was. And as you know, the representative of the Wells Fargo Home Mortgage campus here, I had to engage with them, you know, and that made me feel a certain way, and trying to take care of the people that I represent. And so now that we're going to enter into who knows what for the next 4 years, for me, it's looking for the opportunities, right? I mean, we're so fortunate to live in Minnesota, a blue state, to live in Minneapolis, a progressive city. I live in Minneapolis, a progressive city. Mm-hmm. And so there's, you know, in times of crisis, there's always these opportunities. And so how do we find those? Like I said, I think the native folks, both urban and tribal or reservation based, we're going to find those. We're going to find ways to continue to prosper, to grow, but I suspect it isn't going to be easy.
I always like to say this, and you kind of just touched on it, is that crisis is a Chinese word for dangerous win and opportunity. So every crisis is a dangerous opportunity, like you just said.
Right, right. And so, you know, at our level at NACD and within the urban Indian community here, we're pretty active already trying to figure out how we're creating new resource pipelines or expanding existing ones, and we're already having some successes. And so so I think, again, being fortunate to live in a blue state, I love reading about all of the sorts of resistance measures that blue states are putting in place to protect us through the next 4 years. And it's angering Trump, President-elect Trump, and good. And we'll, like you keep saying, and I love it, we'll get through.
Hey, one of the things that I'd like you to help us clarify is our attorney general now, this is his second rodeo with these guys. And I know he made a statement about being ready to go. Is that kind of what you were alluding to too?
Yeah, I am. And I'm trying to learn more. I mean, the different blue states are doing kind of different things, but they are working in collaboration as well. But right, it's exactly that. And I think it's tremendously sad that as a state, we have to figure out how to resist our federal government and the president's administration. But we do. And I think our Attorney General Keith Ellison is expert at this. He was a congressman for a while. And so I think he gets the federal landscape here. And we're, in some ways, I feel like we're kind of on our own, right? We're going to need to figure out how to go forward. As a health state,
it was kind of put to me, or I read somewhere that, you know, the first Trump presidency, that a lot of the attorney generals in the blue states really got together and brainstormed and protect a lot of things in the blue states that were happening. And that really kind of perked me up, excited me. And then I said, wow, one more day and then we'll go on the radio.
Right. No, I agree. And, you know, we have elections in 2 years, right? And so things could happen at the congressional level, but especially at the Senate. And a lot of the data coming out of the presidential race shows that there was a top of the ticket impact, right? People kind of fell off voting because of the top of the ticket, and there's analysis that shows in 2 years, it's very likely that the Senate will flip and that'll be a good thing. Mm-hmm. And who knows what with the House. Those majorities are so razor thin.
Right.
And so, you know, people are talking about Trump's big mandate, but really it came down to fewer than 300,000 votes in a couple of states that gave him the presidency. So there really isn't a popular mandate for this president, and that makes it difficult to govern.
Well, and I agree, and I don't know, help me with the math here. If only 50% of the country votes, and he got, so really it's a quarter of the country that's mandating this.
You're exactly right. I wouldn't even use the word mandate. It's a quarter of the country that elected him.
Right. Right.
So that's not an overwhelming majority.
No, not at all. Well, I'd like to talk next segment too, a little bit, and get a little deeper in what we can do as citizens. And I know you're talking to your people at Native American Community Development Institute, but also, you know, all the other groups you're in. What can we do as citizens out there to really protect and be awake and also resist? So I'd love to talk about that next segment, Robert.
I look forward to it, and maybe even touch on some of the good news, right? There was a lot of good news that came out of these elections. A whole cadre of elected Native people to office, the first trans member of Congress, and there's some good things there.
Well, let's do that, and then if we run out of time, we run out of time. Let's start with that.
This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
ABC News, I'm Richard Cantu. The Thanksgiving holiday weekend will close with some decidedly winter-like weather.
Highs in the teens and 20s in the upper Midwest, 30s and 40s from Philadelphia up through Boston.
From upper Michigan all the way to western New York, we have lake effect snow warnings, winter storm warnings. Parts of western New York from just south of Buffalo up to Watertown could see 2 to 4 feet of snow. That will last right through the weekend, even into early next week, and that could impact post-Thanksgiving travel.
ABC News meteorologist Melissa Griffin. President Biden and the First Lady delivered Thanksgiving Day meals to firefighters on Nantucket Island. President-elect Trump took to his social media to, in his words, wish happy Thanksgiving to all, including to the radical left lunatics who've worked so hard to destroy our country. Several Democratic members of Connecticut's congressional delegation say they were targeted with threats that turned out to be phony. This is ABC News.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
Packers football tonight. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Green Bay Packers playing on Thanksgiving, a tradition that dates back to the 1920s. They host the Dolphins, who feature two of the fastest wide receivers, Tariq Hill, Jalen Waddle, led by quarterback Tua Tagovailoa, Packers defensive coordinator Jeff Hafley.
I mean, you'll see him throw the ball down the field and hit some big plays, but then you'll see a lot of catch and run. We're in rhythm, he's throwing the ball. And it's not just the receivers, it's the backs too. You know, creating some mismatches, getting the ball in space, and letting their guys kind of catch and run. So they do a really good job with that.
College football, the Badgers host the Minnesota Gophers tomorrow at 11 a.m. Luke Fickell says he won't bring in a special speaker to explain the tradition of playing for the Paul Bunyan Axe.
I'm not a guy that brings in people to speak. You know, I mean, we've got guys within this program. We've got guys that it's meant the world to them. They've bled it. There's a lot of guys that you know, are new here that if they don't understand, shame on them, because we talked about it in fall camp. We talked about it in spring football.
That's head coach Luke Fickell. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. It's been a long road for the live-action version of Snow White, but there is now a release date in sight. The Disney flick has been in development since 2016 and was supposed to be released in 2024. Greta Gerwig wrote the script for the film, which stars Rachel Zegler and Gal Gadot. Snow White will hit theaters March 21st of 2025. Hollywood is full of crazy stories, and actor Josh Brolin has a doozy he shared in his new memoir, From Under the Truck. Brolin tells the story of when he met acting legend Marlon Brando. Brolin attended a dinner at his stepmother Barbara Streisand's house, along with John Travolta and Kelly Preston. Brolin recalled that Brando showed up with a bleeding leg because he stopped to pull someone from a mudslide on the way to the party. Travolta, a well-known Scientologist, noticed and told Brando he had just gotten to the next level as a Scientologist and said he could heal him. Brolin recalled watching Danny Zuko heal the Godfather, one of the most surreal of his life. It was surreal just reading that. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Cloudy tonight with a few flurries and snow showers. Lows close to 10 with a brisk breeze. And more clouds around for tomorrow. Scattered flurries, maybe a brief snow shower, a touch breezy. Highs nudging to near 20. Low 20s for the rest of the holiday weekend. Currently it's 17 degrees.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
His name's Jeff Mandel, general counsel for Law Forward.
Mr. Gableman broke more ethics laws and rules than he followed. The attorney's oath here in Wisconsin is fairly long. Mr. Gableman had, in the course of the sham investigation into the 2020 election, violated every single sentence in that oath.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Are you prepared for an emergency or disaster? Because it's not a matter of if, but when. Don't find yourself saying,
when the storm rolls in, my time to find a pet-friendly evacuation center will have run out.
The scorching heat wave will leave me powerless to cool my insulin.
I'll face a hurricane without meds. Now that's a tough pill to swallow.
Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell. Get started at ready.gov/olderadults. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Pete Schwabe.
On the next Nightlight, it's all about comedy as I welcome Chicago comedian Pat McGann and host of MeTV's Tune In With Me, Bill Leff. And we get a sneak peek at a new show called Wabino Volunteer Fire.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
You're listening to Native Roots Radio. This is Spirit from Reservation Dogs.
Get up and listen.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Native American Community Clinic on Franklin Avenue in Minneapolis, honoring health and tradition.
Yes, they do. Hey, we are here with Robert Lilligren, President and CEO of Native American Community Development Institute here in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis. And I'm glad you brought that up in the end of the last segment, because there are things to be really thankful for, Robert. And I'm sorry that I was a Debbie Downer there, but
it's hard not to be.
Let's talk about a few of those that you rattled off for sure.
Cool. Well, I mean, one thing is, and I don't have the number of how many succeeded, but there were, I'm sure, a record number of Native people on the ballot, something like 178 across the country.
Wow.
And yeah, and that's just huge, right? And a number of them were elected, of course, and you know, here in our local community and local state, we know a lot of those people, right? Mm-hmm. Native County Commissioner in Ramsey County, which is the county that St. Paul's in. That's huge. Kelly Miller, she's the first, right? She's a door opener, a glass ceiling crasher. And across our state, as we know, many Native candidates were elected. And so Canada embraced that and lift that up. And, you know, this experiment in self-governance, this democracy, American democracy, is, you know, 200 and whatever, 50 years old. And 4 years is a fairly small percentage of that time. And so we'll see, you know, what's coming out of this. And I suspect that in the midterm elections, in the Senate elections in 2026, I suspect we're going to see quite a shift.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, again, wow, that's great. Kelly, that's something that was kind of on our radar, and I'm glad she won, because it was really close there at the end.
It was close, right.
That's excellent.
Yeah, it's very good. And then mostly, you know, I brought up Sarah McBride is her name, the first transgender member of Congress, which I think is huge. And then, of course, the Republicans in Congress suddenly are all about bathrooms, right? What bathroom is she going to use in Congress? And I was like, really? You really think this is the most important thing facing U.S. Congress? And so that, it's going to be icky. I give her a lot of credit for being willing to do that. She's been very clear, Congressperson-elect McBride, in that that's what she doesn't want to talk about. She doesn't want to talk about bathrooms. She wants to get to resolving issues that impact her constituents. And I give her a ton of credit. And you got to face it. It's going to be tough. And I remember back in my Minneapolis City Council days, you know, my first hire of my staff in my office was a transgender woman who is now has been president of the Minneapolis City Council. She's a Minneapolis City Council member, Andrea Jenkins. And and one of her big concerns was about what bathrooms she was going to be able to use. And I said, Andrea, that's not my, you know, you'll use the bathrooms you want while you're in City Hall. But for me, a cisgender man, it's not something that I have to think about. Right. And so I really embrace, lift up, and respect our transgender brothers and sisters, transgender relatives, especially now. Today's the day after Transgender Day of Remembrance, right?
Right.
Tiny fraction of the country that's much more likely to experience violence, to be murdered. You know, so how do we embrace and lift up and support our trans relatives?
Absolutely. Wow. Well said. And thanks for that reminder, too. And, you know, also the reminder that we had Heather Keeler and also up in Duluth,
Leish Kozlowski.
Yeah. Thank you, Haley. Leish Kozlowski. She won, too. And so we're keeping our natives here in Minnesota rocking and rolling.
Yeah. It would have been great to see Governor Peggy Flanagan, our whiter sister. Not yet. Right. Well, we'll have to wait a little longer for that. But I think she just positioned herself beautifully while our Governor Tim Walz was out on the national campaign trail. I was so impressed. She was like everywhere. And really building those relationships that she'll need if and when she runs for governor here in Minnesota.
Yeah, I'd like to see, well, and I don't have a say in it, but I'd like to see her as a senator, you know.
She'd be a great senator.
Yeah, well, whatever she chooses, she's dynamic and she's ours, and we really appreciate her. And like you said, she was everywhere, and she's everywhere anyways, but it was really noticeable because she took over a lot of the governor's responsibilities.
Right. I remember working on her first campaign back in 2004 for the Minneapolis City Council, and that's when I got to know her. And then, you know, she had reached out to me, and I was serving on the city council then, and she, I remember thinking when I met her, I'm like, wow, she is so impressive. I thought, dang, she could be governor someday, you know? Yeah. And then I thought, well, hell, she could be president someday. Mm-hmm. Right. So maybe we'll see a president, Peggy Flanagan, in our lifetimes. And I think she would just be great. She's so authentic and so community focused, right?
Well, you never know, because things have really moved quickly. We always joke when we were in high school and we were able to practice our own religion in 1978. And things have sped up, and I really believe too a lot of it had to do with Standing Rock and people really getting engaged with resisting.
I agree, and I think I've shared this with you before. You know, where there are these systems change strategies that are based on an effort called Reclaiming Native Truth. Mm-hmm. And it was several years of research and then development of strategies in certain areas, you know, like politics and policy, arts and culture, TV or media and art. Mm-hmm. And it's been very deliberate, right, to embrace these strategies. But one of the things the early research showed us was that about half of people in America didn't know that Native American people still existed today. Yeah. They were relegated to history. And right. At the time, if you Googled, you know, American Indian or Native American images, something like the first 100 images that came up were pre-1920, 1915. And that just reinforced this idea that we were from the past, we were contemporary, you know, we weren't relevant in contemporary America. And so we've been able to dispel that, right? We're a growing segment of the population. We're obviously contemporary and very relevant. And it's people like Peggy Flanagan, like Deb Haaland, like Charisse Davids that really flipped that. And so now when you Google American Indian images, that's who you see.
Yeah.
Secretary Deb Haaland, Congresswoman Charisse Davids, Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan. They have really flipped the narrative, and I, for one, am grateful.
Right, and what I was getting at, too, is that we're really lucky at our age to see this, and there's more coming.
Yep, I think we've made more progress more quickly than I ever thought we would, and, you know, being in the policymaking realm still, today, I have really had to be deliberate about recalibrating my perspective and my expectations. And you know, for years, it's been banging my head against this wall, hoping for movement. And all of a sudden, the wall has moved a little. And so I need to make sure that I'm embracing that movement and change. So I'm not always living in the same old fight, right? Mm-hmm. We'll have plenty of fights, but okay, what's the next fight? You know, we've done this, and I especially see young people, we've talked about this before, young cultural carriers and leadership emerging that are so solid in their identities and things. And so how do we support them? But to embrace, like you just said, you know, embrace success, embrace the change. There is good change happening and on the horizon for Native people. And so let's not always live in the past, but let's step into the future, the current, the what's happening now and the future.
I really like what you said a few weeks ago, and it kind of goes in line what you're saying here, is that there's been a switch with a lot of work on our Native community about not only getting involved, but getting involved in the process, which, you know, right. wasn't the case maybe, you know, 12 years ago or 10 years ago.
No, you're exactly right. I just met this morning at the Minneapolis American Indian Center Gatherings Cafe, wonderful place, with a high level Minneapolis city official working to encourage community development, economic development in BIPOC communities, you know, and I lifted this up for this kind of this change. We're in a different day, and you mentioned Standing Rock. I think that was pivotal in a number of other current kind of developments, and really trying to encourage her to understand that, you know, we're a complicated community, but we are unified in a lot of our approaches, and especially, you know, here we are unified. We have this incredible asset of unified collaborative Native leadership in the urban community here. Mm-hmm. And that has been hard fought, right? And hard won. It didn't mm-hmm. just happen. I mean, a bunch of people sitting around tables being willing to give up some of their power or their authority for the good of the whole, right? Mm-hmm. And the good of the community. And I just love being able to be part of that whole evolution. I mean, this has been 20 years of work about how to be collaborative and maybe give up some of our power to benefit the community. And I feel like we do that really well here.
Yeah, we do. And from being kind of looking at it from the other perspective of tribal government, I think people like yourself and Dr. Stately and now Ruth Buffalo and all the leaders aren't attached to tribes, but they're more into the people and the community. And right. it really shows.
Well, we have our tribes, right? I mean, I have my nation, my home nation, and I'm a third generation Minneapolis urban Indian. Mm-hmm. So trying to figure out how to balance those identities and leverage them. And then today I was at the Minneapolis American Indian Center for quite a while, for a number of meetings, and at the Indian Center, our Minneapolis American Indian, the State Council was meeting, MIAC, at the Indian Center. And I just thought, so I stopped in a while, so, you know, shook some hands, went, talked to some people. My tribal chair was there, which was lovely to connect with them. And to me, that was so important that, you know, MIAC, Minneapolis Indian Affairs Council, or Minnesota Indian Affairs mm-hmm. Council, was here in Minneapolis, you know, engaging with and acknowledging the urban community. And that just felt really good.
Wow. I wish I would have known that. I would have stopped by and rattled some cages. No, said hi to some people. That's cool. Hey, Robert, it's been really great. Haven't talked to you in a while, and this has been really great catching up, and I appreciate you and all you do for the community. So thanks for stopping by.
Thank you. Thank you much.
Right on. Robert Lilligren, Native American Community Development Institute. We'll be right back with Wendy Pilot. This is Native Roots Radio.
The city of Minneapolis is now on Native Roots Radio with Minneapolis AIR. AIR stands for American Indian Relations. Guest host Christine McDonald talks to people about important things affecting the city's Native communities. Minneapolis AIR dives into topics like public safety, public health, elections, and so much more. Tune in to Minneapolis AIR on Native Roots Radio from 5 to 6 p.m. on the second Wednesday of every month, right here on AM 950.
Thinking about college? Consider checking out Minnesota Private Colleges. These 18 nonprofit institutions keep the focus on students with small classes and professors who will get to know you. You'll find students from all backgrounds, and no two colleges are alike. And when it comes to cost, they're more affordable than you think. Find the college that's right for you at mnprivatecolleges.org/possible. That's mnprivatecolleges.org/possible. Researchers across the country, including in your area, are conducting a study that can include you or people you know. The calcium and vasopressin following injury early resuscitation trial, or simply CAVALIER, is a research study that will look at whether giving two different drugs, calcium, vasopressin, or both, early in the course of treatment, would help severely injured patients that lose a lot of blood survive their injuries. To be included, a person must have trauma injuries that cause large amounts of blood loss and need to receive blood. Because treating traumatic injuries with blood loss is an emergency, there may not be time to give consent before giving the calcium, vasopressin, or both. Most people will be too severely injured to give informed consent, and families are usually not available in time. However, researchers will notify people enrolled and give them detailed information about the study as soon as possible after they arrive to the hospital. For more information or to opt out of this study, please visit their website at lightsnetwork.org/cavalier or call their toll-free number at 1-800-664-0557.
This is Leonard Peltier. I am in Coleman 1, U.S. Penitentiary, and I'm listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations.
How? How? Hey, it's Wendy. I want to, Wendy, the baby whisperer here. Welcome to Native Roots Radio, and great to see you, and thanks for coming on. I just want to introduce you as my awesome, beautiful wife, and you've been an animal advocate for many, many years, and I've learned so much from all your segments, and you're a founder of Native Roots Radio.
Yeah, thanks. Hey, everybody. My name is Hanaji Hihani. That means cares for them. I was given that name by my Dega Curtis. Curtis goes by Mashke Hanajingo, which means walks on white clouds. I'm a humane policy volunteer leader for the Humane Society of the United States. And I work on animal issues at the local and state level, and it's always my pleasure to do that. I feel like I'm a little rusty. I haven't been on the air in quite some time. And I'm trying to remember when the last time was, but I did pop on because I wanted to hear. I like hearing what Robert Lilligren has to say. And I heard you saying, I was in the other room and I heard Robert saying, Robert, remind us of, you know, what we could look forward to for the next 4 years, right? Yeah. We have like this next 4 years to get through. So mm-hmm. I popped my headphones on and I do feel a little bit better now.
Yeah.
Thinking about what Robert had to say. So, because it's going to be hard.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we're going to have a lot of stuff that we're going to need to work on. And also, as a humane policy volunteer leader, I spend a lot of time at the Capitol and I try to educate and try to help people who are representing us understand what ordinances we could use in the area in St. Paul and in the state of Minnesota to help animals. So I'm glad that we still have most of our, right? Everything that everybody we have is still, like our city council member. We have Sarah Jost, who's awesome. Shout out to Sarah. She's great. We still have Dave Pinto, who's our House representative.
Mm-hmm.
He's awesome. We have Aaron Murphy, who is our senator.
Right. State senator.
State senator. And who am I forgetting? Who am I forgetting? I can't remember. Who else do we have? Oh, we have like Betty McCollum.
Right.
She's still our senator. Mm-hmm. Amy Klobuchar, although sometimes she doesn't help us with some of our animal needs. Mm. But, you know, it's important to keep our local people who will help animals.
Definitely.
Vote for humane ordinances and laws for our animals. But So at the Pilot House here in St. Paul, we are gearing up for the winter, mm-hmm. and we have water bowls out in the backyard that plug in.
Yeah.
So that we could keep the water unfrozen.
That's in case I get kicked out of the house too. I can drink some water in the backyard.
It's funny though, you know, I haven't plugged them in yet because it's been, you know, in the 40s during the day. So, you know, whatever. But I did see a crow out there lifting off the top layer of ice on one of the in the bird bath, so he could get the water in there. Yeah, and I was like, wow, but I go out there every day and I just put fresh water in for them, and I just think it's important if people, especially when it's going to be getting really, really cold, to just help our wildlife. We live really close to St. Kate's. Is it a college or a university? I can't remember.
University.
Thank you, Haley. St. Kate's University. They have a beautiful campus, and they have a big pond there where ducks live. And the ducks.
It's a natural spring, too.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, at like 4:30, almost like clockwork, we can say, the ducks come from St. Kate's, which is, you know, I don't know, how far is it? St. Kate's?
Three blocks.
Four blocks, yeah.
Maybe.
So they fly overhead and then they land in our backyard because I always have goodies for them. So, yeah. And just feeding, you know, putting the seeds in the bird feeder. I just think it's important that, you know, the winter months are hard and we should just be able to help our wildlife.
So yeah, definitely.
In tune to doing that. But somebody was asking me, I can't remember who it was. It was just recently. How do you know it's a crow and not a raven? You know?
I don't think ravens live in the state. I don't know.
Well, ravens look a lot different.
Yeah.
So ravens like really have a very broad kind of hooked beak. And a crow is kind of a little bit straighter. But a crow, they travel in groups.
Yeah.
Their habitat is usually urban, right? Their lifespan is 8 years.
Oh.
I know. I thought they lived longer. The sound that they make is caw, caw.
Crow, crow.
C-A-W, C-A-W. They have a, yeah, this is one of the differences. They have a fan-shaped tail.
Oh.
Yes, and a smaller, flatter bill, and they're extremely intelligent. We know that.
Well, you had talked years ago about the McDonald's bag.
Yeah, they did a study on, I don't remember if it was crows or ravens, but they had a brown paper bag, and the birds would know to go to the bag that had the golden arches on them because the birds would most likely find a little treat in there.
A little French fry.
Yeah.
Wow.
And they would leave the regular brown paper bag with no markings on it alone, and they would always go to pick up the golden arches bag. Isn't that funny?
It's also interesting when we look at our crows that they are picky on which peanuts to take. They like go through them like this one's bigger. They shake it, and then all of a sudden – then they leave with like three in their mouth, and I go, where are they going? To the neighbors to drop off some peanut shells?
So, yeah, I think that they're looking for the easiest one that they could crack open, you know. But that's a funny story, Robert. So we were at our neighbor's house, like two houses down, and he said, like, who the heck is feeding these squirrels? I have peanut shells all over my yard. So we blamed it on another neighbor.
Yeah.
It was just kind of a funny thing.
Oh, Tom.
We were like, oops.
Tom's feeding them again.
Oops. Yeah, Tom. Yeah. He must be feeding them.
We go, oh, we got to get going.
We got to go. Okay. But here's a raven. So here's the difference. So a raven travels in pairs instead of a group. So a crow will go in a group. A raven only goes in pairs. And a raven, their habitat is the wild, where a crow is an urban bird.
Okay.
And hear this, the raven has a 30-year lifespan.
Wow.
They make a different sound, too. Should I embarrass myself?
Yeah, we should do a poem about a raven, too.
It's gronk, gronk. G-R-O-N-K. Gronk,
say
gronk.
Say it a little, with a little more feeling.
Gronk, gronk. Instead of caw, caw. See, now you know the difference.
Maybe we can open up with one of the segments with that, too.
They have a wedge.
And howling for wolves.
Exactly. We should do that. We have a wedged-shaped tail instead of a...
You're listening to WBZH, Hayward's home for the Todd Allbaugh Show.
Todd Allbaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us next time for a special edition of the show. We'll look at Black Friday deals and look back at a couple of great interviews of the year. Join us then.
The Todd Allbaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2. Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
James Rundy.
I decided to throw off all my wild and crazy short film ways and make a straight up documentary about my uncle. He was one of the small time dairy farmers across the state that were kind of the backbone and why we got our state's name, America's Dairyland.
It was called The Last Milk. Have you ever milked a cow?
Oh yeah.
I'm curious, but I'm scared to do it because I'm worried I might like it. All right.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
This is the Buzz of the North. WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.